Welcome everyone to this WebSphere Support Technical Exchange session. Today's topic is debugging HTTP 500 exceptions in WebSphere application server environment. Today's presenter is Naveen Shetty. Naveen has worked with WebSphere Level 2 support in various capacities since 2001. He currently supports the WebSphere Edge, IHS plugin, and Java proxy components. He is also responsible for supporting the WebSphere Community Edition product. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Naveen. You may begin.
Thank you, David, for the introduction. Hello, everybody. I'm Naveen Shetty, and I'm with the WebSphere Level 2 support team. So today's WSTE session is on debugging HTTP 500 response code in an IHS plugin WebSphere topology. It's designed to be a very basic level session, and we will discuss ways to debug an HTTP 500 or an internal server, as it is called, from a plugin perspective primarily. I don't anticipate this call, this session, to go past an hour because the scope is limited. We are looking at it from only the plugin perspective. So going to slide two, the agenda today is, I'll start with a schematic and discuss the WebSphere HTTP transport topology. We'll talk about some plugin-related terms and definitions, define what an HTTP 500 internal error is, discuss what it means to the browser and ways to address it from a client's perspective. It's not involved. There's a few things which a client needs to do before reporting a problem. Ways to address an HTTP 500 from a website administrator's perspective. Some basic common sense system health checks to try before taking the trouble of collecting a whole lot of data. Then we'll talk about what exactly we need to collect to diagnose this HTTP 500 problem from an IHS plugin app server perspective. What does the 500, when does it happen, and what do we do to debug it, and measures to address the issue? Going to slide three, please, David. So here's a schematic, a typical schematic of a WebSphere plugin operation. At the front is a web server. The web server loads the plugin component. So the plugin and its hosting web server will work together to ensure that all requests are served correctly when a request hits the web server. When the request hits the web server, the plugin will typically have the first go at the request. And if it determines based on certain factors which are listed in the plugin CFG.xml, if it determines that the backend app server is to serve the request, it will forward it to the app server. If not, it will pass it back to the web server to handle it as a static content. On the app server side, the web container has an embedded web server within it, has its own HTTP port via which it receives HTTP requests. It can receive requests forwarded by the web server plugin, or it can receive HTTP requests directly from a client. The client can be a browser, a standalone Java app, or even an app server-based web service call. Going to slide four, please. So some terms and definitions from a plugin and web container perspective, because today's topic, which is debugging the HTTP 500, is primarily seen between the plugin and the web container components. So what is an HTTP.conf? It's the config file which the web server uses when it starts. It has, amongst other directives, the location of the plugin DLL and the plugin CFG.xml, which are loaded during the startup. The plugin DLL is residing in the same system as the web server. It is loaded into memory by the web server during startup and runs inside the same process as the web server. The plugin CFG.xml, or the plugin config file, is the config file associated with the plugin which is loaded. And the plugin uses information, which are in form of stanzas called elements, to determine what it needs to do with a particular request. So from today's session perspective, a few things are important. I won't talk about all the elements and the variables within the plugin CFG.xml, but the next three variables, that is the connect timeout, server IO timeout, and max connections, primarily determine when JVM is marked down and potentially leading to an HTTP 500. So what does the connect timeout mean? Basically, it means how long should the plugin wait when trying to open a socket to an application server? How long should it wait for an acknowledgement that a socket is available at a JVM end for communication? Server IO timeout. Basically, once a socket is opened and a handshake is done, how long should the plugin wait for a response from the application server once a request is sent? There is no single correct answer here for what is a reasonable value for server IO timeout. It depends on the application, and more importantly, since server IO timeout is set at the cluster member level, it is based on the time taken for the longest running possible request for the application served by that cluster. Max connection is the number of connections allowed between the plugin and the cluster member. Cluster member being another name is the JVM or app server. We'll use these terms interchangeably. So we will talk about the above terms in details in later slides, as they are very important to our discussion today. It is important to understand how they determine plugin throwing an HTTP 500. So the HTTP transport is a component in the HTTP server implemented in Java. Its job is to accept HTTP requests from the plugin and then forward it to the web container. This is a part of the product that runs inside the WebSphere application server. The web container implements J2EE servlet specification. It is responsible for processing data inside the request and giving response data back to the plugin. There are timeouts associated with the web container, basically read, write, persist, and connect, and we'll talk briefly about them in later slides. Going to slide 5. So what is a HTTP 500 error, or 5XX error? Basically, it shows up on the client browser as an HTTP 500 or an internal server error, and it's a catch-all error generated by the web server. Basically, something has gone wrong at the back end in the server serving the request, but the server cannot be more specific about the error condition in its response to the client. In addition to the 500 error notified back to the client, the web server should generate some kind of internal error log which gives more detail of what went wrong. It is up to the operators of the website to locate and analyze these issues, and that's why we are here today to discuss what we need to look at. Going to slide 6. So from a client's perspective, what can they do when they see a 500 in their browser? Sometimes a mere refresh or a reload of the page can clear this issue if it's a temporary issue. Sometimes just clearing your browser's cache can clear the issue because the exception, the page is probably loaded from the browser's cache. Clearing your browser cookies can do it. Sometimes a 500 error is just a temporary error and it can be tracked or debugged as a 504 gateway timeout error. Somewhere along the transport, one of the components did not respond to the requested time. In such cases, you can, contact the website directly to inform them of the problem. In most cases, they already are probably aware of the issue and working on it. All you can do as a client is to come back and try the page again. Going to slide 7, please. So service temporarily unavailable. Sometimes this can be morphed or confused as a 500. 503 is different in a sense that it reflects the overload or the capacity contention at the web server level. And the web server, some web servers will not throw this error and just queue your request. Some web server has embedded in them this exception to tell you to come back later. Sometimes this is put out there just as a maintenance announcement. Slide 8, please. So that shows a snapshot of a typical 500 or an internal server error as to what it looks like. So here you will see that basically it gives you the name of the web server, the domain, and the port you're accessing it at. Usually has an email of your web, the administrator. So if you can, you know, if you want to provide inputs or complaints about a particular page, so you can wean, a client when reporting a problem can wean certain information from this page. It's not much, very limited, but it helps. Going to slide 9, please. Based on the web server and I want to say the browser, you can see variations of the HTTP 500 exceptions. And below are some of the formats which you might the text you might see. They basically all mean the same thing. The back-end web server could not complete your request. Go to slide 10, please. So the HTTP 500 or internal server error can be generated for one of the following reasons. Based on your topology, if you have an external web server, sometimes, very rarely, there have been, you know, I've seen cases where a web server has been known to throw a 500, but it's a very rare condition. Web server should not typically throw a 500. If there's an internal web server or the plugin due to misconfiguration or because there is no application server available for a specified URL, the internal web server can throw the 500. The application server can throw a Java error, which can lead to a 500 being passed back to the front end. In case B, you should be able to find the related error on the external web server error log. In case B, did I say case B earlier? It's in case of case A. In case of case B, you should be able to find the related error in the plugin log. And in case of C and D, which is usually, the error is in the app server log, JVM log, and it's related to the app server or related or caused by the application. In any case, by changing the plugin log setting to trace and changing the log level and collecting specific logs at the web container level, you can start debugging this issue. In case you see that the request is not reaching the plugin itself, then you definitely have some kind of problem in the web server configuration itself. So you have to debug it as that. It's not a 500 error. Going to slide 11, please. So before you start recreating the issue or enabling tracing, which can bog down your environment, and you don't want that in your production environment, enabling plugin trace and web container trace and channel traces can really have a huge overhead. So you can do some basic, system integrity checks. Check the web server, make sure it's running fine. There are no errors in the error log. Make sure that the plugin is loaded by the web server when the web server started. Although if you have issues with loading the plugin, then you're not going to see it as a 500. You'll see it as typically page not found, I believe, on the browser side. Make sure that the app server is started. Make sure that the application is started. If all of these are working properly and you're not sure which application or app server are involved, collect more information about the symptoms that is necessary at this point. Going to slide 12, please. So basically, this slide just tells you that you need to, you know, how you go about checking your app server and make sure that it's started. If it's not started, go ahead and start it. The next slide, that is slide 13, please, talks about the application starting and where you need to look for to ensure that the application has started successfully. So slide 14, please. This is the log. This is the lines you're looking for in an JVM system out log to make sure that the application has started. So you'll basically see the module name and or the application name and a keyword saying the application has started. Going to slide 15. So finally, if you've done all that and you've checked everything and your clients are still reporting 500, and you can't really pinpoint where the issue is, you will have to involve IBM support. Hopefully, this after this session, you'll have you'll get some ideas how to go about debugging the issue at your end, or at least be able to provide pertinent information to make our jobs easy a little bit. So the last few slides talked about what you can check visibly, and if all that fails, the reason is not apparent to you, collect the following diagnostic information. The link I have provided is what we call a must-gather link for a HTTP 500. It's the same link we provide for other exceptions, that's a 404. It has an option for for you to run the IBM Support Assistant Data Collector. Or if you don't want to do that, you can just go to the Collecting Data Manually section and go under the Dynamic Content section and just follow the steps which are listed. Basically what we ask for at the web server level, we ask for the web server fixed pack level. So we ask you to run an Apache CTL version output, provide us the output of that. We ask for the access log. We ask for the error log at the web server level. We ask for the plugin log with trace logging enabled. We ask for the JVM log with web container and sometimes channel tracing enabled. And we'll go into that briefly in the later slides. Slide 16, please. So here's a link. It's a must-gather link for channel framework. It's helpful to collect this if you have SIP protocols in the picture and affinity requests going back and forth. Collecting channel tracing is sometimes helpful. One thing I forgot to include out here is sometimes between the plugin and the app server, you might have, the web server and plugin might be in a DMZ, and you might have firewalls between the plugin and the app server. There are times where we might need for an IP packet trace to figure out what's going on and who is sending the 500. Sometimes, I'll leave that for one of the slides, which we'll see in the later section. So going to slide 17, please. So in a clustered IBM WebSphere application server environment, the plugin has the ability to provide failover in the event the HTTP plugin is no longer able to send requests to a particular cluster or a cluster member. By default, there are several conditions under which the HTTP plugin will mark a particular cluster member down and failover client request to another cluster member that is still able to receive connections. The conditions are the HTTP plugin is unable to establish a connection to the cluster member's application server transport. Another one is the HTTP plugin detects a newly connected socket that was prematurely closed by a cluster member during an active read or write. So there are several configurable settings in the plugin CFG.xml that can be tuned to affect how quickly the HTTP plugin will mark a cluster member down and fail over to another cluster member. You can see in the plugin log connect timeout fired or a server timeout fired or max connections are reached. These are three factors which can lead to an app server being marked down. Although max connections will not by itself mark the app server JVM down. It will default to the other two factors, just connect timeout or server timeout to mark the JVM down. In all cases, when you see the plugin marking, plugin throwing in 500, before it does that, you will see on that session the line which I listed first, that is failed to handle request. If you're going to be debugging the plugin log for 500, you're going to go backwards from this line. Basically, you're going to list out all the failed to handle requests and traverse backwards from here. Going to slide 18, please. So the connect timeout, what is a connect timeout? Since it's one of the factors which causes HTTP 500, it is the time taken for the plugin to establish a connection with the backend JVM. When it's not listed or the value is zero, means it's a blocking connect. So the connection is open forever until the operating system itself has a timeout, and that breaks the connection. Connect timeout of 10 means the plugin will wait for 10 seconds for a connection to succeed. Within that 10 seconds, if no response is received, then that particular JVM to which the connection request was sent will be marked down. At that point, the request will move to the next inline JVM in the cluster until it finds a successful connection. Or if it does not find another JVM in the cluster, it will throw a fail to handle request, eventually causing an internal server error. In an environment with busy workload or a slow network connection, setting this value too low could make the HTTP plugin mark a cluster member down falsely. Therefore, caution should be taken whenever choosing a value for a connect timeout. We usually recommend, based on the load, a connect timeout between 5 seconds and 10 seconds. So usually that suffices. But that is not a rule, though. Going to slide 19. So I just put in a snippet from the plugin trace, which shows you what a connect timeout fired looks like. Here you'll see at the beginning of the line the thread ID and the process ID. These are important things to know when you are pulling information on a particular session. So when you see a connect timeout fired, you will see after that the JVM has been marked down and the request will move to the next available JVM in the cluster. And eventually it will throw a fail to handle request. Going to slide 20, please. Another factor which contributes to an HTTP 500 at the plugin level is the server I/O timeouts. Simply put, it is the time allotted for a request to complete once a connection to the JVM is established. Here, the plugin has found a route to the backend JVM based on certain parsing done with the aid of the plugin CFG.xml, and it has found a route to one of the backend JVMs in one of the clusters, and it has sent a request. It can be a get or a put or whatever it is, and it is waiting for a response once the socket connection is established. This time is called the server I/O timeout. So if within this time of waiting, the server IO timeout pops, basically, you know, it times down, the request will be forwarded to the next in-line JVM. So if the server IO timeout is positive, then the JVM itself is not marked down. So that JVM will receive other requests, and there are other factors which will decide if that particular JVM is going to be marked down. So if the server IO timeout is a negative value, then that JVM is marked down immediately. This feature was introduced about four or five fix packs earlier, in both in 6.1 and 7.0, and now in 8.0.8.5 plugins. If we reach a situation where all the JVMs in cluster are marked down, then the plugin fails to handle the request, and an internal server error or an HTTP 500 is thrown back to the web server and the client side. Slide 20, please. So when you look at the plugin trace, which can sometimes be in gigabytes, if it's a multi-cluster, multi-JVM environment, and the web server is heavily loaded and it's high traffic, it can be the task can be huge to, you know, trace the issue. So some tips to pull out certain pertinent information. So you'll search, first of all, you will have in the access logs all the lines which will give you information about the request URI and the HTTP code which was passed back. So you have that information handy. So in the plugin log, hopefully the plugin log is, you've split it enough times to catch a complete transaction. And you will search for this particular string, which is lib_RIO:wait_on_socket_server_IO_timeout_fired. Or in case of a connect timeout, you'll search for connect timeout. So I usually search for the keyword fired and then try to reduce, zoom in further. So after that, I isolate the entries based on the thread ID and process ID. So I just pull out all the entries for a particular thread ID and process ID, which I suspect has hit a 500. So then I pick out the HTTP 500 from that particular session. And then based on that, I can match the URI and the 500 in the access log and in the plugin log. So if I so going to slide 22, please. So somewhere in that session, you will also see information which will look like this. Basically, a request was forwarded to the app server. And here we see on this particular thread, which ends with 95C, header information. And we can, as I have highlighted in bold, you have the request URI, which is a GET request, and the remote host information, and what the status is. It said WebSphere execute wrote the request, reading the response. So that's the status, and it received a 500. I set one line in red out here, which is a J session ID. Out here, it's minus one, but usually that gives that minus one has the node clone ID, which will tell you exactly which JVM that request was forwarded to. So that information is important to wean out. Going to slide 23. So the third factor is the max connection factor. Max connection is used to gauge when a server is starting to become overwhelmed. It is not used to determine when to fail over or mark the server down. when a request is sent from the plugin to the WAS server, it's called, when a request is sent from the plugin to the WAS app server and it's waiting, it's called a pending request until the request completes successfully. Under ideal condition, max connections is seldom needed, and therefore the default is -1, meaning that particular JVM, the plugin can send unlimited number of requests, and it can have unlimited number of pending requests at the JVM. However, when the application servers are pushed really hard, they can start to become overwhelmed, and the application may not be able to handle the request as quickly. Consequently, pending requests start to build up, and it has adverse effects, as you can as I'll explain. So, on every request, you will see a line which checks for the max connection number and see if max connection limit has been reached. So 0 is false, 1 is true. So if max connection is 1, that is max connection, reached max connection limit is true, then that request will fail over to the next inline JVM. So max connection can be used to put a limit on the number of pending requests per server. But this particular variable is not used directly to mark down app server JVM. The optimum value for max connection will depend on how quickly the application and application server respond to each request. So one way to find the optimum value, optimal value for max connection is to set the max connections to -1 in a load testing environment and figure out the maximum connection, the maximum connection number it reaches in an environment where the rest of the performance factors are within permissible limits, being on the web server end and the JVM memory and CPU utilization end. And that number will give you what is optimal max connection value, which you need to use in production environment. Going to slide 14, please. So to explain load balancing and situations where HTTP 500 or internal server error is thrown back to the web server and the client side, I've kind of picked out a particular a snippet from the plugin cfg.xml for one cluster with three cluster members, and I've kind of changed the values of the connect timeout, max connection, and server IO timeout to just make a point here. So I've highlighted them in different colors so it's easy for you to see. So if you look at the server 1 stanza, you'll see the connect timeout is 0, server IO timeout is 0, and max connection is -1. These are definitely, you know, the worst possible settings you can have, because what you're saying is you can have unlimited number of you can have connections waiting for unlimited number of minutes until the operating system throws a TCP IP timeout, so the connection can keep on queuing based on the response of the app server. And in high load situation, that number of the response, the request queuing will keep on increasing. Once a connection is formed with the backend app server, the server IO is a blocking connect, so because it's 0 and it can wait infinitesimally for that particular request to complete until the TCP IP timeout kicks in again. And the max connection is -1, which means it can have unlimited number of connections between the plugin and the app server JVM. So that's a bad combination, and it will definitely have very adverse effects. So the next server in the cluster, I've set the connect timeout to 5, the server IO timeout to 60, and max connections to minus 1. And the next third one, I've set connect timeout to 5, server IO timeout to plus 60, and max connections to 10. So basically, a connection will wait for 5 seconds. If within that 5 seconds it does not connect, then it'll send the request to the next in line JVM in the cluster, and it'll retry 2 more times since there are it's a 3-member cluster. So max connections are set to 10 here, so you can have maximum of 10 connections before a particular request fails over to the next in line JVM because of the max connection setting. So let's imagine a scenario where request comes in to the first inline JVM, and because of the ridiculous setting for connect timeout, server IO timeout, and max connection, that particular JVM is marked down. Now, you will not see a fail to serve request here right now. That request will go to the next inline JVM, and it'll see if that request can be served. If a connection is formed, fine, and it'll wait for 60 seconds. And within that 60 seconds, if that request is not served, the server IO timeout pops. Now, because the server IO timeout is negative value, that particular JVM will be marked down. So you have 2 JVMs now marked down. It'll go to the third one. Now, suppose in this case that particular JVM already has 10 or more 10 connections. Now, at this point, it has no more JVMs to go to. It will try to go to the first JVM because it has 2 more retries left. But at this point, the request will see that line which says failed to complete request, or what was it? Forget that exact string which attached, but you'll find it in one of the slides, which is failed to handle request. I'm sorry for the delay. So going to slide 25, I have trimmed down this particular server cluster information even further, just so that I could have used the slide for what I just already explained. So going to slide 26. So here is what you're going to see when you see in the plugin log fail to handle request. The connection will be closed at that point, and an HTTP 500 will be sent back. So this is what you're looking for when you're trying to debug an HTTP 500 from a plugin perspective. Going to slide 27, please. So as a recap, what you need is the URL that failed, where the failure occurred, web server, the plugin, or the app server. Collect, diagnose the problem in the following order, which is the browser end first, the web server access log second, the plugin trace log third, and the app server log fourth. So at the web server level, going to slide 28, please. So you can play some tricks with the log format directive in the web server httpd.conf file. Basically, the log format is powerful enough to capture header information from the request and input it on every line which represents one request, and that is in the access log. So here I've given you an example where I've highlighted RH and WAS. These are the two variables. RH stands for the request handler. It tells you who is handling the request when that particular 500 was thrown. And the percent curly brackets WAS curly brackets E tells you who the remote or what is the name of the remote host and the port number on which the request was sent. So if it was not plugin which was sending this 500, you would have a dash out there indicating that some other entity sent that 500. And you would have the handler information is telling you who that handler was. So I put a link out there which talks about other variables in you can use in the log format directive in HTTPD.conf file. So you can log response times with a percent %d symbol. That is useful when you have situations where server I/O timeout is fired, but server I/O timeout is not fired on that request every time. It may be that one resource in that application is always throwing a 500, right? So there are other factors which can contribute to why that particular resource is throwing a 500, maybe all the time or just a few times. One thing which will help you determine as to what the server I/O timeout needs to be is the total time required for that particular request to complete. So collecting or adding a percent %d variable in the log format will give you that information. There are other neat tricks you can do with the log format is percent %t, percent %t, or percent %x, or you can choose modifiers which can restrict printing of access log records for only certain specific HTTP response codes. So if you look at the link, it will give you more information on what are the variables you can use to collect the information which might help you debug the issue further from an IHS web server perspective. So going to slide 29. So sometimes you'll see GSKit errors. May they be bad password or password file missing or missing certificate, what have you, related to GSK. And it can lead to SSL not being initialized during the plugin load. Now, in this case, HTTPS traffic, which is SSL traffic, will default to HTTP. In many cases, I've seen that things are hunky-dory and everything works fine. Sometimes customers don't even realize that even though SSL is configured between the plugin and the web server, because SSL has not initialized, the traffic between the plugin and the app server is HTTP. But things are working fine, so nobody bothers. But sometimes it can trigger cascading because of SSL failure, and it can trigger the other three factors for which the plugin throws an HTTP 500, and it can have a cascading effect on a cluster, marking a whole cluster down. Going to slide 30, please. So in one case, when you see a GSK 404, which is a bad certificate exception seen in the plugin logs, this kind of results in an HTTP 500 at the app server side, because the app server or the application in the app server which is being accessed throws an authentication error, a JSSC exception, and it finally results in an HTTP 500 being passed back. Going to slide 31, please. I'm not going to talk much about the 500 errors from the JVM perspective because the reasons are many, and A, it's beyond the scope of this session, and B, it's going to take a lot of time to go into each of them. So primarily, 500s are thrown by JVM because the primary reason being a timeout. And there are four different kinds of timeouts. A read timeout can be thrown for a read, a write, persist, and a connect. Going to slide 32, please. On the JVM logs, you can see them as servlet exceptions, but most of them are finally, the stack will show you that it's a socket timeout exception. Going to slide 33, please. So as a recap, this slide is redundant because I've already talked about it, but you would go do the system check, make sure that the web server plugin, regenerated properly, check, if a particular request is not working, are there other applications on the application server which are duplicates, send the request there and see if that particular application the response is correct. Then you might want to check the application server to see what's going on with that particular application server. Access the application directly by bypassing the plugin. This way you can isolate the issue at the plugin side. The most important is ensure that the web server and the plugin are at the latest fixback level. We insist on this is because sometimes if you have a back level web server or plugin, there are some issues which are already known to us and have already been addressed. Just because of the fact that you have not hit it before does not mean that you have not hit it this time, and it saves us a lot of time if you can just upgrade the WebSphere plugin to the latest level and see if that issue is resolved. It's easy to back out of a plugin in case you have concerns about applying a WebSphere plugin fix back update in a production environment, and that is your only choice because the test environment has been moved or no longer available. What I'm trying to say is, in most cases, applying the latest fixback level usually resolves the issue in more than 50% of the cases. If it does not, then it's an issue which my team, which is a support team, can work with my back end, which is the development team, to pursue this more aggressively as a defect. So in the long run, it saves both of us a lot of time just upgrading the plugin to the latest fixback level. Going to slide 34, please. So once you have reviewed the plugin trace and you've figured out what the problem is, I provided a link which discusses the various parameters in the plugin CFG.xml and how to go about changing them using the admin console. You'll need to regenerate the plugin and propagate the web server side in for most cases, and you will need to restart. For a plugin reload, you don't need to restart the web server. Based on the refresh interval in the plugin CFG.xml, the latest plugin CFG.xml will be reloaded. Usually the refresh interval is by default 60 seconds, and you'll see it on the first line of the plugin CFG.xml. Go to slide 35, please. So in summation, here's a list of what needs to be collected. So on the web server side, in addition to the version of the web server and the version of the plugin, you need the httpd.conf file, the access log, and the error log. From the plugin side, you need the plugin cfg.xml and a trace level plugin log. From the app server side, you need the system out and a trace log which has web container and channel traces enabled. Going to slide 36. So I've included some reference links which are very handy, and one of the links here talks about the recommended values for a plugin. The other one talks about the load balancing in a cluster environment. These are very informative links written up by one of my colleagues, Steve Reed. These are I would recommend that you read these two links. They're very, very helpful, even for me sometimes. Going to slide 37. Again, more links, knowledge base. You'll find solutions to problems in one of these links based on what the problem is. So now that I've gone through this presentation, I just thought about something which I have not, which I totally ignored, forgot. Some cases in the plugin logs, you will see OS errors, and this can be a factor in the HTTP 500 thrown back. For some reason, between a read or a write, the network decided to go on a blink for whatever reason. And you'll see OS errors based on what the platform is. You'll see different OS errors, and there's a list somewhere out there which tells you what those OS errors mean. But I forgot to list it in this session. I should have. But what I'm trying to say is sometimes network glitches between the plugin and the WebSphere apps of a JVM can will cause an HTTP 500 to be thrown back. So going to slide 38. There are some other WebSphere technical exchanges out there. These are some of them which I have given, but there are some other informative WebSphere technical exchanges by my colleagues which are very, very informative. I would recommend that you know, you go through, go to the IBM site and look them up. Slide 39, please. At this point, I will hand the forum to David, and I'm open for any questions you all have.
Thank you, Naveen, for a great presentation. And finally, don't forget to connect with us. You could be notified about upcoming webcasts related to the product and topics discussed today by subscribing to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange mailing list. Simply send an email to wsehelp@us.ibm.com with the subject WSTE Subscribe. Also, if there is a topic you would like to see scheduled, or if you have any comments that would help us improve our future webcasts, please let us know at that same email address. You could also connect with us through our Facebook page and our Twitter account. Talk to us and let us know how we can make this program even better for you. We welcome any ideas you may have. Thanks again for your participation. At this time, Marcella, we would like to open the lines for questions.
The first question comes from Bindu Gera. Your line is open.
Hi, thank you. Thanks, David and Naveen, for your presentation. My question is, you know, whenever we see the 500 error in the browser, like we'll check all the traces, I mean, like application log, access log, and also like we'll try to look into the server I/O, connection I/O, and how the request is handled through the logs. But what if the trace has not yet been enabled at the time, because we cannot able to look into the trace and look into those entries to figure out what the error is? So at that time, you know, how can we troubleshoot that?
So if can you all hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
So you're talking about a situation where you are seeing a 500 error in warn level or error level plugin logs, or you're seeing 500 errors in your access logs, and tracing is not enabled in the plugin side, or tracing is not enabled in the web container side. So from the plugins level, you can enable tracing dynamically. All you need to do is go and edit the plugin cfg.xml, change the log level to whatever it is to trace, and save the plugin cfg.xml. And within the next 60 seconds, if the refresh interval is set to 60, within the next 60 seconds, that plugin will be reloaded, and you can see that in the plugin log that the plugin is reloaded. And from that point onwards, you will have tracing enabled, and hopefully you can catch the exception at the plugin level. Now, unfortunately, web container and channel tracing, you need a restart of the app server. Actually, no, you can
dynamically enable tracing at the web container and the channel tracing also. It'll be minimal, but when you see the issue, there are certain things which you need to do at the app server side to start tracing. I don't know much. I don't want to go into that because I don't want to say, I don't want to give you wrong information on the app server side. But if you, I can send you that information separately if you need that.
Oh, okay, sure. I'll get in contact with you with that for that information. Thank you, Naveen.
So my email is on the presentation. You can send me an email and I'll respond to it.
Okay, sure. I'll do that. Thank you.
You're welcome.
The next question comes from Abru Mahinta. Your line is open.
Yeah. Hi, Naveen.
Hi.
My question is related to the connect timeout and server IO timeouts. So, if like this connect IO timeout and server IO timeout, they have a default value of 5 and 60, respectively, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So, when was this set? Because in the earlier versions, like we used from 6.1 or 7 in WebSphere, application server I'm talking about, to 7.0.0.1.9, the default values were like 0, which means no timeout. But when we're using 7.0.0.21, we get these values, 5 and 60. So this caused a major problem in our application migration from WAS 6.1 to WAS 7, as part of which there was a retrial. I mean, every 60 seconds, there was a retrial which was conflicting with the internal logic of the application. So when and based on what this was decided?
Okay, so as I explained, connect timeout of 0 and a server IO timeout of 0 basically are blocking connects. So when you connect the connect timeout 0, it can wait indefinitely for a connection to be successful until the time when the operating system decides to throw a TCP/IP timeout. In some cases on Linux, it can be 15 minutes. Right? Okay. When that happens, you can have connections queuing up and just waiting and exhausting. If you have max connections set to a finite number, that will exhaust max connections real fast. So at some point, this was not a good idea to begin with, to set blocking connects for connect timeout or server IO timeout. Production environment, you have to do groundwork to understand what the capacity your app server can handle and what is the response time for your application. Function verification testing needs to be done using a load balancer, a load runner or some kind of a loading environment for load testing to come up to a optimal value for connect timeout and server IO timeout. So it was changed because there were issues with the default values of blocking connect 0.
Okay. And because, like, if we do this change, I mean, if we have a non-clustered environment, like one JVM, so will there be retry after the timeout fires?
What is the connect timeout? Is it 0?
Now, if it's 5 or 60, the default values, like there was a retrial of the request, since it's 1 JVM, no cluster.
After the retry interval.
After the retry interval.
Yeah.
And Naveen, another thing, these properties, these are there present in the WebSphere console. We find in the web server plugin properties for the JVM. We find that these values are, you can set those things, right?
Yeah, as a cluster member, yeah.
Yeah. But if we set them and we regenerate the plugin, they don't reflect in the plugin. I mean, but if we manually change them from the web server plugin, then only it works. But if we change the values in the console and we regenerate the plugin in the WebSphere application server level, the values don't reflect.
Okay, so that is probably because the location of the plugin CFG.xml, which is generated, and the location from where the web server loads the plugin CFG.xml via the HTTP.conf file, those two locations are different. So manually changing the plugin CFG.xml, which is loaded, can have adverse effect. Basically, when someone decides to change that location for the plugin CFG.xml generated at the app server side, right, then you won't know what happened. So it's always good to sometimes there is a reason why people have two different locations, one from where it is loaded and one where it is generated, so that inadvertently your working plugin CFG XML is not overwritten. On a cluster level, it is under the DMGR directory structure.
Yes.
And you might want to look up there, and the generated one and the propagated one, you will see the changes in there.
Yeah, but the thing is that if I change in the WebSphere application server console and then try to regenerate from the DMGR, then it should have the plugin cfg.xml file that is generated should have the updated values, right?
In the location listed, yes, under the DMGR plugin directory.
That we don't find that happening.
Okay, so we can debug this as a PMR. If you can raise a PMR, we would be glad to help you with that.
Okay.
Yeah, raise a PMR or send me information about, send me an email and I'll ask you some pertinent questions and we can go from there.
Okay.
So basically, I need locations of your directory and some screenshots.
Okay. Thanks.
But the best way is to open a PMR, so this way there's a record of what's going on, and you won't have to wait on me only to provide you information. We have a team of 20 people who can respond.
Okay. That's good.
There are some questions in the group chat, and the first one is, what is the difference between Max Connections and Max Web Container Threads, and where is Max Connections configured?
So, one of the links provided, I believe it was slide 36 or 37, I gave you a link which talks about changing plugin parameters from the administrative console. So it's under the, as a web server as a cluster member, it's under there for plugin properties. You can change it from there.
Okay, thank you. And then, what are the recommended connect timeout max connections values in the plugin config XML in a clustered app server environment?
I didn't catch that. Could you repeat that, David?
What are the recommended connect timeout and max connections values in a clustered environment?
Okay. As I mentioned in the presentation, the load factor for your environment usually determines what the optimal connect timeout is. The max connections, what you need to do is set the max connections during load test, when you are running a load test, where presumably you will be having the maximum load which your web server and your app server JVM in a clustered environment can handle. So you set the max connections as -1, and you have stats level plugin logging enabled. So that will give you statistics of the maximum number of pending requests, right? So based on other factors like the memory and CPU consumption at the web server level, memory CPU consumption, at the JVM level, what is a tolerable limit to determine what is the right load factor, you can see the maximum number of pending requests, and based on that, you can make a call as to what your max connection should be.
Okay, thank you. And then I see one more question. Does WAS provide the high watermark on max connection if we have -1 set?
Frankly, I don't know the answer to that. I will have to get back to that person. Can he send me an email, please?
Okay. I've got slide 1 up, which has your email address on it, and it's on slide 1 of today's presentation. No, there's another question out. For a base WebSphere environment, default for server I/O timeout equals 0. Why?
That doesn't make sense to have us. Because you don't want, in a base WebSphere environment, you have just one JVM serving, and at no point do you want that particular JVM to be marked down. And you don't want the server IO timeout to be a factor for which the JVM is marked down.
All right, thank you. At this time, we will conclude the presentation. We hope the information presented today has been valuable to you. We appreciate your participation, and we hope you will join us for future presentations, which will be announced on the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site. Remember, a replay of today's presentation will also be available on this site in the next day or two. Thanks very much for joining us today, and thank you, Naveen, for presenting today.
Thank you all.